October 28, 1912. Dear Father, having read your letters, I see that you are enjoying good health, which makes me very happy. I am fine, thank God. Well, you tell me that you enjoyed festival time in good health, for which I am happy. And you were wondering if I remembered what it is like. Well, I definitely remember because for us, there were days over here that make you remember. It started to snow on August 29 until September 6. It caught me on a high ridge with a band of sheep. The weather was really bad those days. You all must have been feeling the heat there at home, but we were freezing in the snow. Those days, it would have been better to be invited over to someone's home as a house guest than to take care of the sheep in the snow. Those days, I thought I was going to lose half of the sheep, but I didn't lose any. Others lost up to 200 and 300 with a bad storm. Later on, in the letter I write, here, working for a fixed salary, you can earn some money quickly, but even if you made $1,000 during the winter, you find yourself without work. In town, you end up with nothing because it gets spent quickly. The time that I have here, I would like to spend working continuously. I would like to make a salary to be able to return there. Your son, who never forgets, Lorenzo Garmendia.
That was a clip of a letter written by an immigrant, Lorenzo Garmendia, who came to the United States in 1912 and worked as a sheep herder, as many immigrants did when they came here from the Basque region. And he constantly wrote back to his family, and the family saved the letters. So they were returned and to a family member and brought and given as a donation to the Basque Museum.
I'm at the Basque Museum and Culture Center in downtown Boise, and I'm talking to Patty Miller, who is the executive director of the museum. And Patty, can you tell me, we're sitting in a dining room with a long table here. Where are we exactly?
Now, this is boarding house style. We're at 607 Grove Street, the oldest surviving brick residence in Boise. It was built by the Jacobs family in 1864, but then a turn of events, it started being used as a Basque boarding house about 1910, and the Uberuaga family was able to purchase the house in 1928. So this is the Cyrus Jacobs Uberuaga house, newly restored.
And this is part of the Basque Museum and Cultural Center, is it?
Yeah, this is our most treasured artifact, this house.
Can you talk to me about the importance of the boarding house to the early Basque settlers and immigrants in this area?
The boarding house was really, you know, when you say home away from home, it really was for those people. Many of the initially men that were coming over were young, you know, 15, 16, 17 years of age. My grandfather came when he was 16. And just leaving their families behind and coming to this area that the expanses were so great in the West and the life of a herder, so much isolation going up into the hills for long periods of time, that this was a place that they could come to when they first came to this country. There were people here that could speak their language. They could have food that they were used to eating. And then business owners could come and contact them to take them up into the hills, or it was a place where they could receive their mail from the old country. Many of the people that came had very little education, so it's possible that the boarding house owner would write letters for them back home, would help them with banking, medical visits, those sorts of things. So it played a very important role. There was a network of boarding houses, so you could, you know, if you were here in Boise or you might be going to an adjacent town, one of the larger hotels in New York City, Valentin Aguirre, he did a lot to receive people coming into New York and then get them on their way to across the United States with a piece of paper on their shirt or their hat that said Boise, Idaho or Winnemucca, Nevada, and sent them on their way and got them out here. So there were local ties and more national and international ties with the boarding houses.
And networking. Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell me, you're the executive director of the museum. When people come to Boise and visit this museum in the Basque block, what will they find here in the museum and in this house?
Well, the museum, we try to tell a little bit about the history of the Basque, who are their Basque, uniqueness of their language, and then more about their story as they came to the New World and the American West. The boarding house tries to present the two stories of the Jacobs family who built the house that were early pioneers, not of Basque descent, but some of the first people settling in this area, and then to give the visitor an experience of what it would be like to step back in time in a boarding house. And you might listen to the radio, a radio program that they might have sat around and listened to on a Sunday night. The grandchildren talk about them listening to radio programs, or listen to excerpts of people that came to visit here on Sunday afternoons, and the daughter, oldest daughter who grew up here, oral history recordings of her telling of her mom taking care of people who had the flu during the epidemic in the late teens. Just trying to give you an experience of being able to understand what it was like to live in a boarding house and the importance of them.
Now, you've just used the term oral history, which is a term that maybe a lot of people don't use or don't know. Can you explain the importance to a cultural ethnic group of what is called oral history?
I don't know that it would be important just to an ethnic group. I think oral histories can be done of people in various areas of work or geography. You can do oral history.
Any family.
Sure. But for our community, we have some wonderful treasures in that there were recordings done in the 1970s of people that were quite old at that time. So they're immigrants that came in the early days. The Basque came to Boise about 100 years ago, so some of those people were with the original group that came over. And then later, subsequent oral histories have been done having women tell their story, just immigrant women, talking to second and third generation. What was it like? Your parents were immigrants, but what was it like for you growing up either in that hyphenated generation or the third and the fourth generation trying to keep some hold of what your grandparents or great-grandparents had from the old countries, trying to hold on to that. So they're personal stories of what people believe and think, but it's a wonderful insight into the past and helps us tell the story now.
Now, am I correct that you're third generation Basque?
Well, in a way, I am. My grandfather was an immigrant. This is all on my mother's side of the family. Miller is not a very common Basque name. That's not my dad.
It doesn't sound too Basque.
My mother is Lekona or Lekwona, and her father immigrated here in 1918. Her mother was born in Idaho in a small town called Jerome. It was my grandmother's parents that came over from the old country on that side. But my mother was born in Shoshone, Idaho, and grew up speaking Euskera as her main language because my grandfather by then was a foreman for a sheep company and my grandmother was the cook. So my mother learned English when she went to first grade in Shoshone.
So you're not far away, really, from the original Basque settlers who came to the West.
No, as a matter of fact, my mother has first cousins that started coming over when she was in her late teens, that they still have sisters that live in the Basque Country. So we have very close ties to immigrants themselves and then to our family still in the Basque region.
Now, the museum is an amazing archive. I mean, right behind you I see pieces of clothing that from those times, an old radio in the middle of this long dining room table. It looks like a wedding veil, is it, over there?
Yeah, first Holy Communion veil, and that was Serafina Uberwaga, the oldest daughter, and the family had her first Holy Communion picture, a religious celebration in the Catholic Church, and they also had her veil, so they donated that back to the museum.
So we have a lot of physical objects here, archives, that have a direct connection to a very unique community in the United States. And yet, and you've just said to me before we started taping this interview, that it's in a living culture. Tell me about that living culture. Why is it a living culture?
The Basque Museum and Cultural Center kind of has these two stories, and we're just part of, I guess you could say, one spoke of the wheel of many different organizations here in Boise. The museum part, as we said, you know, collects and tries to preserve things from the past. But the cultural center side of the museum, really the doors kind of come open at night, and maybe that's when that takes place. So in the school year, you might find language classes with adults learning Euskera in the evening. On Tuesday nights, there's a group called Boiseko Gazteak, the young people of Boise, and they might have dancing practice. And prior to that, there might be a music practice with button accordion and tambourines. There's an older group of dancers, the Nkati Bass dancers, that were formed in 1960, and so now are the children and almost grandchildren of the first group that started it, still continuing to learn and perform the traditional dances from the Basque region. A lot of those things at night. The gallery of the museum is often used for dinners and gatherings. What started out in this boarding house as a way to pay the light bill in 1988 is now a wonderful way to share our culture for a group to come in, sit down, be from all over the United States, have somebody talk to them a little bit about Basque culture, have a great family-style Basque meal. Dancers might come in afterward. Might have tours of the historic buildings. Just ways to, so that they can see this is not just something that we're trying to say from the past, but really it is a living culture with young people learning about where their families came from and something about their heritage.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but most people are relatively aware of immigrant groups and their culture and their attempts to preserve the heritage of their culture, whether they're Italian-American, German-American, or whatever. However, when I was coming here and spoke to my friends, both Canadian and American, said I'm coming to Boise, Idaho, the largest population of Basques outside Europe, they were stunned. How come this particular cultural group isn't as well known?
Well, the Basque region is a very small in relation to most sizes of countries. The coastline is 110 miles long, so if you were to put that here in our state of Idaho, it would fit in our largest county. So I think that is one thing, just geographically, it's a small location. Then historically, Basques have been often identified since the Basque region now is located in what is northern part of Spain and southern part of France. Oftentimes, you know, in history records, they were identified as either being Spaniards or French. So there isn't a long line of people saying, well, these were Basques. They were just identified as being part of another culture. We're quite recent immigrants to this area. So, you know, if you talk to some people of Irish descent, that they've been, you know, five or six generations living in Boston, you can see how maybe the ties to the old country could become further away. Here, when you're third or fourth or fifth generation, some people still have relatives that they're in contact with in the Basque region. So I think that just the element of time might make a difference. Now, people often ask, you know, what do you think is going to happen to the Basque culture in the next generation? Well, I mean, the true test is to see if young people are still coming to the activities, and that is their parents saying they're actually choosing to practice their culture. Dr. Johnny Sursa spoke about that one time, and that's really true. You know, my name is Patty Miller. If I wanted to say that I'm of German descent and there's not an active German club here, so I'd choose not to really celebrate any part of my culture, I could do that. But you're saying, well, it's important enough that I want to take the time to be involved in things, and it's a choice that you make to practice your culture, and we're fortunate that so many people in this area have chosen to do that. We've also been extremely fortunate to always have people that stepped up to volunteer their time and to, instead of just talking about something, do something. And we've had just a history of people doing that in this area. And because of that, we have a wonderful Basque Center, a gathering place that the Basque community said, we need a place to meet, and we're going to build it. We need a Basque museum, okay? We're going to get a group together and we'll do that. Or we need to start teaching young people button accordion or tambourine. All right, 5 years ago, a group of volunteers gathered together and started that group, and now there are 40 musicians in that group. So we've just been extremely fortunate to have people that were not only talkers but doers.
So determination, but also self-determination.
Very much, and an effort to try to get things done.
Patty, thank you very much. This was absolutely wonderful, and I hope everyone comes to visit the museum.
Thank you very much. We love to have people come learn about the past.